Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, let's see, Matt, there with Euro Country. And we have been trying to suggest that she wrote and released that specifically for my next guest because it is recession inspired. And Adam Maguire's new book delves into the lives of that generation who were born during the good times, but before they were old enough to benefit, the financial crash hit. And the Bailout Babies tells the unique story of the tough hand that these young people who are now in their late 20s and their 30s, they were dealt a bad hand, but they've innovated, they've adapted to thrive when the odds are stacked against them. And author Adam Maguire is with me here in the studio. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, how are you?
And congratulations on the new book, which launched last night. So it's on our shelves now. But let's talk about the Bailout Babies and how we define them, first of all. Who are they?
Yeah, so these are the people who were born during the Celtic Tiger, but they became adults, or they came out into the real world, shall we say, after the crash. So you're really talking kind of mid-90s through to, you know, maybe 2007, 2008. Like those people are now 18 or into their 20s and 30s, and they're very much the people who were affected most by the housing crisis as we have it now,
yeah.
The seeds of which were planted in the bailouts.
And the theme running through the book, I mean, there's lots of different life experiences in there, but the theme of a lot of it is housing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I didn't want it to be about housing because, you know, we know that there is a housing crisis and that's been, you know, spoken about in great depth already. But it's really about how that impacts you, because when you think about it, you know, we can be guilty sometimes maybe of thinking about people who can't get a home of their own, as you know, they're stuck in their parents' box room. And we know that the numbers of adults who are stuck in their parents' box room has been rising dramatically. It's over 500,000 as of 2 years ago, which was up 19%, I think, over the decade. But we think of them and, you know, they're sitting waiting to get a house. But of course, they're not. But the fact that they can't get their own place is mm-hmm. impacting everything really about their lives.
Well, they're not, but they're also, you know, high achievers. You know, they're people who have great careers, great jobs, earning really good salaries.
Yeah, really well educated. You know, they've done the right thing. Mostly they've gone to college, they've gotten a third level degree, or they've gone into apprenticeships and they've learned a trade. They've put the work in and they've maybe gotten good jobs as well, and are earning, you know, decent money, although probably not as much as they should be. When you look at the fact that they're better educated than previous generations, their earnings haven't kept up with that. Their earnings are static, or maybe even slipping a little bit. So they've done everything right, and as you say, often, and this is one of the interesting things, you know, speaking to some people, was that in their work lives they have a lot of responsibility. They have, you know, they do a lot of very serious things, make big decisions, and then they come home and they walk through the door and they're a kid again in their parents' house, and you know how to try and manage that, basically.
Yeah, and that's just weird for everybody. It's weird for the bailout baby, and it's weird for the parents as well.
Yeah,
and it's just dysfunctional, isn't it?
It is, and it's very difficult. And, you know, not to suggest that the parents aren't having challenges here as well, because they're having to deal with, suddenly, you know, they had a certain dynamic with their child. Their child is now an adult with responsibility and thoughts of their own and everything else. And, you know, in the past it would be like, okay, off you go now into the world and I'll see you every once in a while and you pop in. But now they have to try and, you know, relearn that relationship and that dynamic. And obviously there's a lot of tension as well, because you have that much frustration, people stepping over each other in the house as well. And, you know, it can create a lot of problems for them.
Well, listen, when I read the book, what I loved about it was, and this is running right through it, Adam, you're going out into the strangest places, I think, to find these people, to talk to them, all sorts of clubs and societies and people who are buying Dubai chocolate. And it's great fun.
Yeah.
But one of the places you went to was an axe throwing club.
Yes, that's right.
Jen, tell us about
just,
that.
Just off the canal there in Dublin city, just outside the city centre, the called Axe Club. And it's basically a warehouse, and it's a place where people can go and throw axes at big wooden targets.
Listen,
and
they can after throw I read it, I wanted to go myself.
Oh, yeah. yeah, I highly recommend it. I hadn't done it before, and I highly recommend it. It was a nice kind of stress reliever, and it was actually I kind of went expecting to be, it'll probably be a bit macho, it'll be a bit kind of, you know, bro-ish, but it really wasn't.
Not at all.
There were more men than women there, but there were women there, and they were all really kind of nice and friendly and chatty and just having a bit of fun. There was no kind of competitiveness really to it. Everyone was just enjoying themselves.
Yeah, well, you see, and you talk about this in the book as well, the pub culture has changed so much.
Yeah, it really
has. That you
need
to go into these places to find people.
Yeah, right? And I think that's the thing. Like, I think the generation and the trend that we, you know, older people and people of my generation and older would have known of, you know, that's what you did. You built yourself towards the weekend. You went out on the weekend. That's how you socialized. That's how you spent your money. That's changed massively, younger people, partially because it's so expensive now to go out and they just can't afford it, or because they're trying to save, they're trying to cover rent, partially for health reasons as well, that they just don't like the idea of being hungover and, you know, not being able to do things with their weekend. Uh-huh. And it means that, you know, all of these interesting different ways of socialising have kind of popped up, and little niche interests and, you know, new ways for people to connect with each other and to do something that they enjoy has popped up as a result of that. And the Axe Drawing Club is a really good example.
So what else did you find in that vein?
I went to a pottery painting class. It was a Simpsons themed pottery painting quiz, and I learned that I didn't know nearly as much as I thought I did about the Simpsons while I was there. I thought, oh, this will be easy, and it really wasn't. But this is basically a place in Smithfield in Dublin where you can go and paint pottery, as the name suggests, and then they'll cure it for you and everything, and you have a lovely piece of painted pottery.
Yeah, and those little places are popping up all over
now. Yeah, and really interesting, and a lot of kind of they're kind of themed. Some of them are, you know, are alcohol free or bring your own beer or whatever it might be. But again, just this idea of you don't have to be coming and sitting drinking pints or whatever. You know, everyone is kind of welcome, or it might be a non-drinking kind of place as well. There was the Clockwork Door and the Keys, which unfortunately actually shut since I was there. But that was all about, you could come and just kind of hang out. It was like a big living room, basically. And you could play board games, or you could just sit around. They had a popcorn machine, and you could just kind of spend a bit of time there. And, you know, some of the people I spoke to there lived in apartments or houses where they were sharing with other people. They were on top of each other. They didn't have, you know, outside of a small bedroom, they didn't really have a third space for them to kind of relax.
So they're heading out somewhere where they can relax.
Yeah, and they don't want to go to the pub. That's not for them, or it's too expensive for them. So these were the kind of places that they find, you know, that they can socialise.
And tell me this, and I don't know if you can answer this one now, but did you find when you met the bailout babies that they had a different worldview to yours or to ours, because their experience is quite different, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. And I think I think they maybe had a different attitude, and I think people pick up on this, maybe pick on this the wrong way. They have maybe a different attitude towards their careers. And part of that is because the nature of work has changed dramatically. You know, I mean, you know, previous generations, you got a job, and you stayed there, and then you retired, and that was that. And that's kind of gone. People don't stay in the one job for their whole lives. But the work that they're also facing is much more kind of tenuous than it used to be. You know, you're thinking about gig workers, and you're thinking about, you know, even what we think of as well-paid tech workers. You know, those jobs can disappear very quickly.
Yes.
You know, and people, I think younger people, the bailout babies, kind of recognise they don't have loyalty to me, so I'm not going to necessarily, you know, be the one that, you know, to be working all hours and not getting paid extra for it. And I think as well, because the fact that housing is so out of reach for a lot of these people, you know, they think of it as something maybe in 10 years time I might be able to buy a house, or maybe it just won't happen. It's just kind of too far flung. They kind of say, well, you know, I may as well, I'm working to live, because why else? There's no point in me knuckling down for 3 years. And even if I do, I won't necessarily get the deposit or whatever it is I need. So I'm just going to work so I have money, or I have the time to go and do the things that I enjoy. And I'm going to put myself and my health and all that kind of stuff and my interests first as well.
A listener says, this is so relevant right now. All of my friends who are in their early 30s are feeling down and anxious. We've done everything right, or what we were told was right, but yet we're still living month to month. I lived with my parents for over 4 years. It really affected my mental health and my relationship with them. It meant I didn't see most of my friends because I was saving money and I wasn't doing anything. The effects on this generation are really underreported. It's a generation feeling lost, anxious, and feeling we've lost a big chunk of our years due to focusing on buying or saving for a house.
Yeah.
But you found, while that is the case for some of them, there are others who, just as you've been describing, are seizing the day and they're living their lives as best they can.
Because I suppose they're trying to make the most of it and they're trying to socialise. I think that is an important point, though, that like we are seeing a rise in mental health issues among younger people, rising anxiety and depression and so on. And, you know, there may be many factors behind that. But the fact that they are stuck at home with their parents, as I say, in a situation where it's just going to cause tension.
Or renting, you know. Or renting, really,
or you know, sharing a house, maybe whatever it might be, and financially under stress as well. And, you know, not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, everybody, if you told them, look, knuckle down for 2 or 3 years and you'll get your own place, can do that. But you say knuckle down for 2 or 3 years and you won't be actually, because house prices have gone up by so much in 2 or 3 years, you're actually not any closer. That's really a difficult place to be. But yeah, there are people who have just kind of said, okay, I'm just going to try and get on with it, or try and find ways of earning bits of money on the side that maybe that will be my out. I might kind of you know, hit the jackpot there and that will help me get the house that I need.
Well, let's tackle something else. You've sort of touched on this now, but this reputation or belief that this generation are lazy.
Yeah.
Because loads of people you spoke to have side hustles and they're keeping very busy.
Yes.
Doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like, you know, we're used to Nixers and things like that, and people who, you know, would do a little job on the side. It was usually what I would think of as someone who had a trade and then they do an extra bit of work on the weekend, cash in hand. You know, that'd be the kind of side hustle culture before. But now it's, you know, people who might have one job, but they have a hobby which they try and make a bit of money off. You know, maybe they're an artist or you know, whatever it might be. You know, one of the people that I spoke to was a guy called Davey Comerford, who's a personal trainer.
Oh, he's my favourite.
Yeah,
go
well,
on.
He a really, really fascinating guy. Really, and such a lovely guy. Yes, he's a personal trainer. That's his day job. He loves it. It's going well for him. And again, when I spoke to him, he was living in his parents' house. He managed somehow or another, basically because he was posting stuff on social media, he ended up doing work for Quinn, which is an audiobook app, but it's dedicated towards erotic audiobooks. Mm-hmm. So
He reads dirty books aloud online.
He reads dirty books online, as a little side gig. And he's saying, look, I want to be a personal trainer. I love doing that, but I really enjoy this voiceover work. It's something
and
extra.
And he was approached by somebody who heard his voice.
So he was posting stuff on Instagram, just talking, you know, doing motivational videos and all that kind of stuff. And people started saying, oh, I love your accent and you love your voice and blah, blah. And someone said, you should do stuff for Quinn, tagged them, and they got in touch with him and said, oh, yeah, would you like to do a few books? And so he's doing regular books for Quinn, and loving it, and kind of says maybe there's a career here for me to do voiceover work as well as what I'm doing, and that would be a little extra revenue stream for me as well. So
good for him.
Really interesting stuff that you know, I didn't know this app existed.
No,
before
I hadn't heard about it till I read your book. But I just, it's fascinating the things that people are doing,
things that just weren't possible a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like for all its ills, the internet and you know smartphones and everything has opened so many opportunities for people to be able to kind of, you know, maybe monetize and make use of the skills that they have beyond, you know, their 9-to-5 job.
And Weird Watercolors, the people behind that, and people should check them out on Instagram because they've got great stuff
that
was born out of a side hustle, wasn't
kind
it?
Kind of, yeah. So it came about, they basically were in lockdown during COVID, Abby and Audrey, and they started doing kind of live stream drawings for just to pass the time. It kind of caught on. They started then selling, you know, pictures and things like that, funny little drawings. And then they had a massive hit with a calendar they made. It was Jesus Christ, What a Year. And each month was kind of Jesus themed, kind of jokey.
Great
kind
fun.
Of stuff. Really, really fun. And a huge, huge hit. And they went almost overnight from, you know, struggling to pay rent to being able to get a deposit together for a house and have a successful business as well. So it's really, you know, an example of someone just hitting the jackpot like that with a side hustle.
But then in this new world, they faced huge obstacles as well because the minute they became successful, they had people copying.
This is the problem. Yeah, suddenly they realised that their drawings and their calendar was popping up on Amazon and Temu and everywhere else, and it wasn't them putting it up. They reckoned that these kind of scammers made more money from the calendar than they did, the amount they sold. And it's really, really hard.
Soul destroying, isn't it?
You're kind of playing whack-a-mole, trying to, you shut one down and then another one pops up. They had to get a, you know, expensive legal team involved to try and, you know, sort it out. It does show you as well that I think there's a vulnerability there because people are kind of keen to try and find ways to make extra bits of money. And of course, for all these side hustles, and we hear success stories like we're Border Colours, there are an awful lot of people who are duped into, you know, rise and grind and, you know, working hard and, you know, just pay for my investment programme or, you know, this kind of thing, and they get ripped off, or they put an awful lot of time and effort into something that doesn't actually make them a lot of money as well. But they're so desperate to try and earn a bit of extra money that they're willing to take that chance, and unfortunately they lose out.
Eleanor's been on to us. My great uncle went on a ship to America aged 15. I'm not feeling sorry for my 19-year-old who's on his phone in his ensuite room. You see, the context has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, know? It really has. Yeah, yeah. He'd probably, you know, maybe be happy to go on a ship to New York now or something.
Well, you need to get him onto Quinn and see if he can voice some of those stories.
I mean, it's not to suggest that previous generations didn't have their own challenges, of course, but I think there is something particularly cruel for this group that, I say, they were born in the Celtic Tide. They probably saw a little bit of kind of the lavish spending. You know, they probably went to Mallorca on their holidays rather than going to Mosny, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then
it was gone.
It was gone, you know, and they're picking up the pieces. They're, you know, everyone suffered from the crash, but they're the ones really that suffer the most for something that they had no hand in creating, really, you know. So I think there's a cruelty there, really.
Did you find any light at the end of the tunnel for the bailout babies?
Well, I think the fact that despite all of, you know, the challenges they faced, that they're so kind of, you know, ambitious and they're hardworking, they're well educated. I think you kind of get a feeling that, like, if they're given a chance, they might just figure this out for themselves somehow. I think that, you know, they're just, by sheer force of will, they're kind of reshaping economies around them. And I think, you know, maybe they can solve the problem. I do think as well, though, it's a negative, but with a silver lining. If we don't sort the housing crisis out, you have this potential problem where these people are emigrating. We're having more Irish people emigrating than immigrating at the moment, which usually happens during a recession. It doesn't usually happen during a boom. So we're losing a lot of talent and a lot of, you know, really bright people because of that. You also have people, if they can't get a home, they're not starting families. And, you know, they're not having kids. That means that we don't have future taxpayers to pay our pensions and to mind us in care homes and to staff shops and staff factories.
Being
and
selfish about it.
Being selfish, yeah. And you know, there's, you know, even people who are being greedy and say, look, I'm all right. You know, this will affect everybody if it's allowed to continue. And maybe that's the solution then, to say, well, we all need to kind of make sure this is solved, because otherwise, no matter what situation you're in, you're going to bear the brunt of it down the line.
Well, Adam, it's a great read. I enjoyed every single chapter in it. It's fascinating and it's funny and it's clever. And you don't have to react to that, because that's just what it is. It's a great book. It's out now in your local bookshop. It's called The Bailout Babies by Adam Maguire, who now we have to call an author every time you're on the programme, and we will happily do that. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you.
Congratulations. The best of luck with it. Just some news coming in here now. Just these are very brief headlines that are flashing on screens in front of me. I see the European Commission is proposing to suspend free trade arrangements on Israeli goods over the Gaza war, which is a big move. Kaya Kallas, the EU foreign policy chief, has also proposed sanctions on Israeli ministers. This is news just emerging. The sanctions proposal includes the Israeli ministers Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich. That's according to an EU official. But that news is just emerging right now, and we'll bring you more as we get it. Coming up in just a moment, more from Barry Lenehan in Windsor.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.